My name is Teen McDonald, and I'm chair of the SER Natural Regeneration Network, which is a special section of the Society for Ecological Restoration. So I welcome you all to this symposium titled Sharing Insights About Harnessing Natural Regeneration in Restoration. The subtitle is SER's Natural Regeneration Network Commences Its Journey Towards a Common Language. We're very open to questions about broader insights into harnessing natural regeneration, as that's the overall topic. But we would like to generate a little bit of discussion on that special topic of towards a common language. So we're now going to open up to a discussion. I might preface this by asking each of the presenters one question, and each presenter can respond in turn. Robin will be the first off the rank. And we're asking, what term or terms do you like to use in your country or the areas or countries in which you work to convey harnessing natural regeneration in restoration? What are the sort of terms you use or like to use?
I think I used to use just the term natural regeneration or whatever, however that translates to Spanish or Portuguese, in the context where I was working. And then a few years ago, I switched to the term assisted natural regeneration. That resonates better with farmers and with practitioners and with organizations because they see it as a mission that they can take on and more active role that they can play. And they can be promoting particular interventions that, if they weren't taken, would not have a very good outcome from the perspective of the site. I do think people are not practitioners and many groups that are involved in restoration are not very well trained in terms of recognizing what existing components of natural recovery are already in the site. We need to do more training on this, particularly when there are invasive species. People might, they just see the invasive species and they don't see the other things that are there without a lot of training. And I think they tend to want to see a more clean understory situation. They want to just focus on the trees, and they don't really see the importance of thinking about ground herbs or other sorts of vegetation in a forest context. So I think we need to have a broader understanding of practitioners about what we mean and why some of these non-tree species that are coming in, you know, could be important in facilitating the recovery of the site, providing habitats for biodiversity, and allowing a more diverse ecosystem to take hold. And I think that's part of it. They're not all trained as ecologists and have that background. So that would be my comment.
Thanks, Robin. That's very good. Ramesh, how would you like to answer that same question? What terms do you like to use in India to convey harnessing natural regeneration and restoration?
That's a good question, team. And when we started, we were using the terminology of partnering with nature, which went down quite well with a lot of people. And then we changed it slightly to learning from nature, because basically ANR requires us to keep learning from nature and listening to what the feedback that the ecosystem is giving us. So learning from nature actually resonated well with a lot more people. And as I alluded to in my presentation, the big challenge was in convincing the funding agencies who were very keen on planting tree species and convincing them that this is not the right way to go for a variety of reasons that we already discussed. But one of the important reasons that we gave them was that even if we want to bring back all the species, they're just not available in the nurseries or wherever we want to get them from. It's impossible to have the entire palette of species through reintroduction alone. So that again, we could hardly have about 15 to 20% of the species potentially possible to be introduced. So these were the arguments which actually the funders could understand and support the ANR approach. But overall, learning from nature as against learning about nature is a phrase which resonated very well with a whole lot of people.
That sounds very good to me, and it resonates with many of the processes here in Australia. Yes, very similar to what Robin was saying before. In Australia, there is an interest in things looking neat and tidy and orderly, and an interest in the dominant layers rather than perhaps the herb layers. And there's a very strong cultural inclination to plant. So when people think about restoring nature or restoring vegetation, for some reason, planting becomes our first go-to concept. Maybe that's because you can get an instant result, or maybe it's because of our heritage of having an agricultural and horticultural culture. But, you know, as we've said before, there is a need. We're getting much better results when we do wait for regeneration, and we apply triggers to harness it to get many more species regenerating. So, the very first term that was used in Australia was bush regeneration, and that is also currently still used, as is indicated by the organisation I work for, whose name is the Australian Association of Bush Regenerators. But we found that the term bush wasn't necessarily applicable to all ecosystems. So we find rainforest people tend to call themselves rainforest regenerators, or wetland people call themselves wetland regenerators, etc., grassland regenerators. But bush regenerators is a term that comes in handy. And we talk about working with natural processes. So we use that a little bit like learning from nature. You know, we find that catchphrase helpful, working with natural processes, so people understand that what we're looking for in the long term is an ecosystem that will self-reproduce. So it has to be able to naturally regenerate in the long term. Yes, people understand that. So we say, well, let's try and see what we can do at the beginning of the project to try and stimulate natural regeneration. That is kind of a proof, is it not, that we are getting the right species in the right place. So we do advocate that people pause for at least a couple of years, but not do nothing necessarily, but apply triggers and do whatever is possible to facilitate that natural regeneration process, and it seems to work very well. And we're now learning a little bit more about what that interface is between reintroduction and natural regeneration. So we call all the processes of that harness natural regeneration, just some is facilitated and some is spontaneous. And we can see there's real potential for a combination of those two, some form of natural regeneration and reintroduction. And so I really liked what Ramesh was saying about doing an analysis of the gaps. You know, once you've had 2 or 3 years of response from the natural regeneration approaches, then what are the missing species? What does need to be reintroduced? So this is. I think we are speaking the same language, even though sometimes we mightn't be speaking the same words or using the exact same words. So does anybody else want to have a comment on that?
I agree. I think we're really all using the same concepts. I do think that in a lot of countries, forest restoration is largely conducted by people trained in forestry, and that is why the go-to solution is tree planting. that's what they know how to do. That's what they've learned to do. And they're comfortable with that approach. They see natural regeneration as much more risky, much more uncertain. They're less in control of what will occupy the site. And that makes them feel that it's not as likely to be successful. Because their concept of success is again, it's based on their mindset from coming out of a forestry training. And I think that's something we have to reckon with and approach in some other ways of providing broader training. And it's something I've encountered a lot in my work in tropics, working with forest restoration and people largely trained as forestry engineers who are entering the field of restoration now. Silviculture and forestry. It's just something to think about. It's not that they don't understand exactly, you know, they may have had a class in ecology and understand about how species regenerate. But I think they, in general, don't see that as being at the core of the restoration effort. It's something that might come later after they've planted the trees. Then maybe they'll see some naturally occurring things coming in. That would be a good thing from their perspective, but they don't see that in as something that initially is important. So some of the distinctions are also in the timing of when reintroduction should or should not be happening on the sites.
Very good. Ramesh, do you have another comment you'd like to make on this theme?
I'm going back to Robin's comment about restoration practitioners around the world requiring to be more aware of the potential of assisted natural regeneration. I think it basically comes from a few mental blocks like this will not work or this is going to take much longer time, etc. I think practitioners have to approach ANR with an open mind and also have some patience to allow it to work and then decide on other approaches. So I think the keeping an open mind becomes very important if ANR has to become more widely practiced.
Very good. Yes. In Australia, we've been able to incorporate units into our nationally accredited training courses for tertiary training, vocational education, and so on. And that incorporates understanding concepts of resilience and assisting regeneration at a restoration site. I think we're going to be able to share resources throughout our network, our SER Natural Regeneration Network, to improve concept communication throughout our interested countries. So that's great. Now, we also need to refer to the fact that much of Carol Prack's work uses the term succession, which is the ecological term that often in the past has accommodated the concept of resilience after disturbance as well. And so the terms primary and secondary succession are still very relevant to our field of work, because there are different modes of recovery that apply in cases of primary succession, where the site has to recolonize because it has been completely cleared, or secondary succession, which is where there remains some residual capacity to recover. Robin, do you see differences between primary and secondary succession in the sites that you work on?
Yes, I see only a few cases that I would consider primary succession. In areas, for example, after mining, where the topsoil has been removed, that would be more akin to a primary succession scenario. And in some cases where fire has been extremely severe and has killed all of the biota within the soil, the top layers of the soil. So you really don't have anything to start with. So there are some situations like that where you have to either replenish topsoil or actively prepare, fertilize or
yes, or possibly create triggers for accelerating recolonization. We lost your sound there, Robin. I'll just move to Ramesh and ask Ramesh about primary and secondary succession in India. Do you see differences there in your sites?
We do see differences, particularly in the stages of secondary succession. We have the early successional species coming in, but the late successionals take much, much longer and they may require reintroduction. So there is a slow progression from primary to different stages of secondary.
Right. Okay. Well, one of the questions in the chat is whether or not the SER restoration standards or the Australian standards, whether they have had any impact on the adoption of the process of harnessing regeneration in restoration. Ramesh, have you found the standards helpful at all? They have mentioned processes of natural regeneration.
They have, because one of the principles of the SER standards is working with the potential for natural recovery. That's one of the principles. And that does talk about natural regeneration of various types. So it is helpful. And the standard operating procedures that have been published recently also have a separate section on leveraging on the natural potential.
Okay, that's very good. That's terrific. I'd like to ask another question that was put forward. Whether or not harnessing natural regeneration, whatever we like to call it, can also be effective in non-terrestrial ecosystems or non-vegetation elements of ecosystems, for example, aquatic ecosystems or faunal populations. Ramesh, are you finding, for example, in your national park, that the concepts of resilience and facilitating regeneration useful for fauna, and then also you might want to comment on aquatic ecosystems. Thank you.
It's certainly helpful for fauna because the diversity of species coming back through natural regeneration is quite high and therefore meets the requirements of the foraging requirements of different herbivore species. So it certainly helps fauna. And many of these plant species are co-evolved with the faunal species. So there is a close association between the fauna and flora. And that again becomes very important. However, what we normally do in a project where we are trying to create habitat for wildlife is to do an inventory of all plant species along with their associated benefits for different types of faunal species. The benefits could be in terms of browsing or nesting or nectar gathering or various kinds of benefits for various faunal species. And then that again helps us kind of integrate natural regeneration with the requirements of different types of fauna. And that is another level of identifying missing gaps. So gaps in terms of different types of fauna is another type of gap analysis. So natural regeneration fits in nicely into the feeding and the requirements of habitat requirements of different fauna.
That's true. And yes, certainly we find that the case in Australia. Too often there is a conceptual separation between vegetation and the fauna, but in reality, the two are interdependent. So we do know that we're not going to have natural regeneration unless we have processes including pollination by fauna and dispersal by fauna, and equally the whole integration of animals and plants in ecosystems is essential for cycling and so on. So really we need to be thinking fauna all the way through. Now, missing fauna, it's so often assumed that by creating the habitat, the animals will return. They will not necessarily. Yes, they have a greater potential for migration in many cases than vegetation, but in many cases they need to be reintroduced once habitats are favourable, and that includes the status of a site with respect to pest species or species that may compete or predate upon the desirable fauna. So it's a very complex thing, and I think, yes, there is a need for integration of the two. Now, with respect to aquatic ecosystems, and Ramesh might comment on this as well, there has been some very interesting cases where triggers have been applied in, for example, marine restoration, where, for example, in shellfish reef restoration, restoration practitioners have reinstated shells to create artificial, if you like, substrates or artificial reefs, and that can, in its own right, trigger recovery of the fauna. So and also marine flora. So yes, the term assisted natural regeneration or facilitated natural regeneration can be very relevant there, as can combined regeneration, reintroduction. So yes, when these reefs are created, there's a natural colonization of many, many fish species and other organisms of the sea. So that's just one. And of course, you know, the reintroduction of snags or dead trees in rivers to create the structure for providing habitat for fish work is there are many examples of that, and also removing barriers to fish passage and so on. All these things can facilitate natural regeneration. Now we've got about 8 minutes left. Ramesh, have you got any other questions that you'd like to see?
There is one more question in the question box, Tim.
Yeah. I think we might have somewhat addressed that. It's about, can the level of training or mentoring referred to as necessary for the identification of identifying natural regeneration potential be elaborated on? And that was a question, I think, that Robin pointed out when she discussed the, or pointed out the need or the low level sometimes of awareness and education among people who work in the field, and possibly even ecologists and other professionals. But it's, you know, the idea of training and mentoring is critical to this community and industry of ecological restoration. How do you deal with that, Ramesh, in your sites?
In our sites, it has come more by our own experience, and our field supervisors and field botanists have learned this process over a period of time. So it has come more by experience. But I think at a broader level, as part of the natural regeneration thematic section, we are planning to come out with more case studies and more guidance material on this, so that as we move along, there is more of training and scientific material that is available for people who would like to follow this approach.
Yes, fabulous. That is exactly right. The SER Natural Regeneration Network is attempting to focus to some extent on bringing the need for training and education and linking people with resources to the fore. The Australian Association of Bush Regenerators also has an accreditation system for people who are practicing in the field of harnessing natural regeneration, and it's called Bush Regeneration Practitioner Accreditation. And this is something that other countries may wish to do. We've had this system up for, say, 38 years or something, and it is very valued. If a client is looking for a practitioner who has bona fides in the practice of natural regeneration, ARBA accreditation can give that assurance to the client. And it can also be a way of increasing somebody's potential for career advancement in their own organisation and so on. And it is a way of establishing and maintaining standards for practice. But fundamental to it is that people have undertaken training in a course that delivers knowledge and skills in assisting natural regeneration. And on top of that, experience and mentoring in the field. So I really do commend this model to other organisations. So thank you everyone for attending this session, and we hope that our section will be able to build on this. We will definitely have a link on our website to the presentations, and welcome all new members to our network. Now, if you're not already a member but want to be, you can join this section through your SER member login on the SER website. So membership of our section is only open to SER members, but you can readily become a member through the website. There are lots of opportunities and avenues for people with different levels of financial support. So please keep an eye out on our website, and we wish you all the best in your regeneration activities now and in the future. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much, Teen. But don't forget that you can also view the posters for the conference online, as well as view recordings of all in-person and virtual sessions online at www.ser2023.org as well. All that content will be available for delegates through the 31st of December 2023, after which it'll be available in our conference library for SER members. And that concludes this session. Thank you so much.